A Jerry Pippin Special Report. Chemtrails. A Project from Hell. Sometime in the late 70s, it became apparent that the high-flying contrails of superjets crossing the sky was much more than just a romantic reminder that we were deep in the heart of the jet age. These contrails were lasting longer, and they seem to be crisscrossing each other. We have decided to do this investigative series on this phenomenon, and it appears that there is something sinister going on. But why?
And I talked to my NSA buddies at Fort Carson, Peterson Air Force Base, and Buckley, where I was actually their doctor taking care of the pilots flying and spraying the chemtrails. So I know it's real. If anybody says it's not real, they're full of it.
It seems to be apparent from looking at the patents for aerospraying and for using nanoparticles to put into the atmosphere. These particles seem to be made of aluminum, barium, and other elements. There's even evidence that it's in jet fuel itself, not as a byproduct, but put there evidently to aid in this worldwide effort of covering the skies with what we know now as chemtrails.
Well, many of the planes that we're seeing here in Abilene will actually turn whatever they're spraying on and off right before our eyes. I mean, you'll see a plane up there flying like normal, and then all of a sudden it starts spraying. We've seen them fly off into the distance and then loop around and fly back again. These are not your typical planes with a preordained path destination from city to city. Someone needs to explain to me why do they stop traveling in one particular direction and then loop around and come back again. They perform this behavior so many times that we start seeing the tic-tac-toe grids in the sky. We're witnessing the giant X's.
The FAA at one time said it was acid rain. They were combating acid rain. Yes, the FAA has acknowledged that something is going on in the skies. Our investigation shows that there are specially fitted aircraft. For 30 years, this has been happening with these aircraft. They've been fitted, and they've been flying. And all this costs money. So who is paying for it? And why? What kind of public money is being used? And who's getting the income? Is it really necessary? And is this threat real, or is it only a way for these corporations to make a lot of money? There may be many agendas here. All are coming into play. Seems to be a perfect storm, benefiting certain groups. Seems that the chemical industry has been working for some time on specially developed plants. They're hybrids, half nature, half chemical. Think of the money that could be made if Mother Nature's seeds no longer worked in the chemically changed compounds that have been dropped onto the soil. Agribusiness should not be discounted at all as one of the culprits. The potential of huge profits is certainly there, and it's worldwide, and chemtrails are seen everywhere around the globe. There is a trail, a paper trail, of what was done before. But why is it so guarded securely by such regulators as EPA, air and water quality control experts, as well as the oversight of the FAA itself, NOAA, NASA, and the United States Air Force? The list goes on and on. There's lots of oversight into our laws, but are these laws being circumvented? We will be examining all of these issues with several guests in this series. Let's get the series underway first with investigative filmmaker Roxy Lopez, who's been on our show before, and she's speaking to us from her home in Arizona. In fact, she lives very close to one of the centers of the Chemtrail Creators, a company called Evergreen Incorporated. We'll talk about this and much more with Roxy, so stay tuned. But right now, Roxy, I'd like to welcome you to the show. And how are you?
I'm great, Jerry. How you doing?
Roxy, as you know, this will be a continuing series, but in this first of the series of programs, we have three guests that we'll be bringing on before it's over, and one of them is Michael Murphy, and I've never had Michael on the air, so why don't you tell the audience a little bit about who Michael Murphy is?
Michael Murphy is the producer and director of a film called What in the World Are They Spraying? And he can explain a little bit more of that. It's very popular. It just recently came out, and it's basically a documentary that they did in Hawaii and Arizona and Mount Shasta regarding geoengineering chemtrails. They have a lot of research that they have done, and it's, I commend them for doing that. They also did it in conjunction with Edward Griffin, I'm sure you know. And they have made a very big dent in the so-called conspiracy of chemtrails.
Well, Roxy, you're a pretty good little movie maker yourself. People who are members of Facebook, they can check out the Roxy Lopez page. Or, you know, go to YouTube and put your name in there. You got a lot of videos there, too. They're all very, very good. Mark McCandish will join us later in the series. And you and Mark have been talking?
Yes, we have.
Well, tell our audience what you've been talking about.
Well, Mark and I have been talking about quite a few things, planes, uses of planes, and some of the chemical relationships to, in general, you know, weather modification or perhaps an angle on what we have been seeing. I went through Mark after we did the Evergreen video, the Pinal Air Park Evergreen video, and we can discuss a little bit of that more. But I did go to Mark asking some pertinent questions in relationship to what I had seen and what I had filmed, and he seems to be a plethora of information as far as giving us some insight on what certain planes are used for, et cetera,
et cetera. Mark's quite a talented guy. He's a conceptual artist by trade. He works with aerospace industries, drawing things by specification. Very interesting. He knows a lot about almost everything.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Let's talk about chemtrails. You've been involved with this for some time, Roxy, and lots of information now is becoming public. All of a sudden, it's been going on for three decades, maybe more. What's it all about, anyway? I mean, why was it so secretive? And I guess it still is.
You know, I think, if to answer that question fairly, I think that it is really connected to a whole lot of agenda, and global warming, mastering the science of weather control, weather warfare, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there are a lot of money. That's another real big one. Where's the money coming from and who's making money off of it? It's really thick, hence the coming together of many different groups who have been investigating this, you know, real investigators looking for true data on all of this. I think for the mainstream or the general population, it would be best to not discuss, not on your show, I mean, I think this is their agenda. You're opening up a can of worms if you start using these terminologies to the general public of, you know, weather modification, controlling the weather by 2025, the side effects of trying or attempting to control the weather. What does that mean to us as a population? Can it go bad? Can it go awry? Has it already done that, being that even cloud seeding has been in this state legalized since the early 80s, and I have a lot of proof of that. You know, and what are the side effects of cloud seeding, and what are the side effects of trying to reroute, let's say, water in one area causing drought in another? There's a huge liability factor there that's not being addressed as well. So if the public doesn't know it exists, then the public doesn't really have any rights.
Let's get right to it, Roxy. You mentioned Evergreen, and I did too at the top of the show. This is a company that has facilities at
Pinal Air Park.
Air Park. Now, you went out there. Can you tell me about it?
About the airpark and about Evergreen.
I guess Evergreen has part of the space is located there.
It is. It leases from what I can find out. It leases space from the county. So Pinal Airpark is supposed to be a public landing space for, you know, pilots and gasoline and a little coffee shop. And at the same time, if you do some aerial footage, it's a boneyard, which is a boneyard is, you know, retired planes or planes that aren't in use anymore, maybe used for parts and things like that. And then there's a portion of it that's also leased out to the there's black ops there. There's they store black helicopters there and fly black helicopters there. And then there's the National Guard training there. And then there's Evergreen. And there's a whole part of that park that is off limits to the general public. You cannot go in. It's guarded. And but I have supporting evidence when I went into just the land contract there. Who does what? Evergreen is leasing the space from the county of Pinal in Arizona.
Okay, for our listeners, where's Pinal County? I mean, what
Pinal
town's
is,
in here?
Well, it's county, but it's somewhere called Marana, which is close to Tucson, Arizona.
And you use the term boneyard for those old airplanes. I've never heard that before. It's a graveyard for airplanes that are no longer in service.
Yes, those in Tucson, I know a lot of people in Tucson that I've spoken with, and they've known about, ironically, they've even known about Evergreen for quite some time.
Now, you've looked into Evergreen, and you know about them. So tell our audience and tell me about what Evergreen is exactly.
Evergreen Aviation is, you know, there's a lot to support that they are somehow contracted or owned by the CIA, but yet they are a private corporation. They even do trade on the U.S. stock market. In many facets, but as far as Arizona goes, Evergreen Maintenance, it's unclear as to what they do, and I can explain how I know that after speaking with the guard there.
Now, as I understand it, Roxy, you never really made it inside. I mean, you just made it up to the guard's gate. Is that right?
That's as far as we were allowed to go. We weren't. We were told to turn around and leave, but as far as what are they doing, it's vast. I mean, Evergreen is known for the Evergreen Supertanker. The Evergreen Supertanker is a large plane, which Mark McCandlish can talk to us a little bit about, more about in depth what they do. Basically, when at first sight with Evergreen Aviation, it appears to be, you know, planes that, you know, put out fires, let's say, large fires. That would be the uses of some of the planes. But then there's a lot of other areas of Evergreen that, for instance, on the Evergreen Aviation website that is here local to Arizona at Pinal Airpark, they do have listed on their website that they do weather modification. That is one of their clients, and you can even look into some of their clients, and that's where the rabbit hole goes deeper and deeper, what those clients do. They also do aerosol fitting to aerosol fitting would be the aerosols that are being sprayed into the air, those big white strips that everybody sees in gridlocks and X's. So the aerosol canisters, if you will, can be fitted onto planes, and they offer this to private citizens as well, private pilots, if they want to be involved in we don't know what, because it doesn't state what those aerosols would be. For instance, if I called there and I had a plane and I wanted to get fitted for these aerosols, at that point, when I would call, I guess the next question I would ask is, what is the use of the aerosols, and do I get paid for having these attached to my plane, and what will, you know, what will I be, what will be the purpose of it? Will I be employed by them? So those are unanswered questions at this point, because unless I call them and find out as a person of, you know, that I'm interested in this service that they provide, they do not explain any further in detail what they
now,
need.
Now, Roxy, I must tell you, I haven't had the sinister angle on chemtrails. I haven't had the sinister angle on chemtrails like most people until recently. I always just thought it was kind of high-tech crop spraying, only they were way up in the air. You know what I mean?
They do have those applications. For instance, in the 80s, you know, that, and I thought the same thing as well, Jerry, because I remember being in California during the couple of years of MedFly spraying. And there were, you know, planes that would go out at night, and they would warn the public not to go out in, at a certain day because they were going to be spraying some chemicals for the, not, you know, the invasion of MedFlies. You know, attacking crops and things like that.
Yes, the great MedFly episode in California. Always wondered if that was really the straight skinny, the story they were telling us was true, or was it something more devious?
We wondered about that back then, because one of the side effects, and this would be if you were chemical spraying, one of the side effects is people were getting really ill. And getting flus and you know, again, being told to stay inside, and how can you stay inside for a whole month? But we wondered about that way back then. We kind of discussed that and said, what are they really doing? The program did eventually go away and out of sight, out of mind, okay?
Well, Roxy, if you fast forward today and the chemtrail situation, some of it may be the same. Some of it may be legitimate, some of it may not. But let's tell the audience, you got a video about it, but let's tell the audience about your visit to the Evergreen Gate.
Yes. Well, what had happened in brief, we had been on Google Earth taking a look at Pinal Air Park because there had been some rumor, all right? So we got on Google Earth and started to see all these planes parked and, you know, photos of these planes that appear to be images that I had been taking videos of when over our skies here. And they looked similar with, like, the red bellies on the plane and things like that that were doing heavy spraying. And so I thought, wow, let's go down there. Being it's a public air park, let's go take a closer look at Pinal Air Park. It was just a shot in the dark. Now, keep in mind, I did not know at that time, I had not made a connection to Evergreen facility being down at Pinal Air Park. So I intend fully to get in the car, take a couple of cameras, and we head down there to go in and take a look at the air park that's public. Now, as we're going down the freeway, and I do film that, I film the exit and so other people can go down there if they want. One of the first things we noticed that was a little peculiar was we get off the freeway, and the freeway, if you get off of it, there's no stop sign or stoplight where you can go left and go into the city or anything. It's a ramp that goes directly either to Pinal Air Park or back onto the freeway if you go to the left. And we kind of made a note of that, that that's kind of weird. This kind of drops you off in nowhere, and if you didn't know where you were going, you'd be roping yourself right back onto the freeway again, going, what happened? Where'd that exit go? So we go ahead and take that exit that goes directly to Pinal Air Park. It says Pinal Air Park on the freeway signs, etc. So, you know, we're heading off there. But then what's right in front of us about 50 yards ahead is a big sign that says Evergreen Maintenance Center with a guard shack. And I say, oh my gosh, keep driving, because I did not expect that. I was like blown away. Meanwhile, backtrack a little bit. While we were on that freeway, about less than a mile before we're getting off of that exit, we did notice all of those planes parked just like how we saw on Google Earth. So I shot all of that live, to note that there's all those planes, and then there's the exit you get off, and now we're faced with Evergreen. So we passed it, and there's only, you know, fields and some mines out there of some sort going on. No houses or anything, no residential anywhere. And so we think about it and gather our thoughts, and I say, well, let's just go to the guard shack then. Because I said, we must be at the wrong place, because there are the planes right there. And this says Evergreen, and how weird, this is Pinal Air Park. Let's just ask, it can't hurt. So we drive in, put the cameras down, and ask, as just, you know, citizens driving by on the freeway and notice the air park, And the first question, the first thing we notice is that the guard is actually wearing, on the left is his name and on the right is Evergreen, fatigue, with a, you know, little identification that he works for Evergreen. So we say, hey, you know, what is this? Where are we? Is this Pinnell Air Park? And he says, no. And we say, but the sign says Pinnell Air Park and the directions are to Pinnell Air Park, then what is this? And he doesn't say anything. And we say, okay, the sign here says Pinnell Air Park, but it also has a bigger sign in front of that that says Evergreen Maintenance Center. Is this Evergreen? And he says, yes. And then we ask the next question, oh, well, what do you do? What does Evergreen do? And he says he can't comment. He's very nice, and he asks us to leave. And I said, okay, wait. So how do we get over to those planes, all the planes that are parked? Do you have planes here? And he said, we have no planes. And we're looking at them. And I said, okay. And, of course, I had already taken the photos of them, and they're on Google Earth as well. So he says, there are no planes here. And I said, okay, is this a government facility, or what is this? And he says, no, this is a private corporation, and it's heavily monitored, and you need to leave. Now, as we are there speaking with him, we notice black helicopters as well that are, you know, a couple of them flying around the perimeter of the entire what appears to be Pinnell Air Park. And so we mention that, and then he, the guard says back to us that, you know, we really need to turn around and leave. He claims, and quote unquote, he says, I've said more than I should have, so you do need to leave. And that was it. Now we do turn around. We notice there's another set of guards, ahead of us. So in other words, if we were to run through that guard station, there were more guards ahead to stop you from getting into the facility. We did notice many cars leaving, the facility while we were parked there. We turned around, exited, and upon our exit, we noticed Channel 13 News. And they went in. And we thought, whoa, what's Channel 13 News doing at Evergreen? That's interesting. So I made a note of that as well. They went in, and they were gone now. And I thought, God, maybe we can wait till they come back out, or, you know, what's the deal here? What are they doing at Evergreen, you know, this highly secured area? What do they know that we, what a coincidence. This was December 3rd, by the way. And anyone can do their homework on this if they choose. So we also, we turned around and we went to the other side of the freeway to continue to keep an eye on this facility. When we did that, we were followed by a couple. Well, at first, we just thought somebody was, you know, was just behind us, a van. But then we had a mini convoy at the end of the first 45 minutes behind us. And this is, like I said, this is across the freeway now where we can still take photos. We can still watch some action. We did watch some chemtrail planes. We did not see them land there, but we did see chemtrail planes. We got some good footage of a cloud that was spread all the way out, and then it turned into multicolors, and so we got that on film as well. That's typical out here that we're seeing more and more often.
Roxy, interesting choice of words, convoy. I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about, you know, security jeeps, SUVs, things like that. Is that what we're talking about? Were they in security vehicles?
They were not security. These were different types of. One of them that stood out was we were going north on the side of the freeway, and a van, a big white van, was coming towards us, going the opposite direction. That van pulled off the road, made a U-turn, and got behind us. And that's where that's why it became noticeable. But you know, people make mistakes all the time and make U-turns and go back another direction. By the way, in the middle of nowhere, I don't know why they would have to do that, being that the freeway was right around the corner and they could have just backtracked on the freeway.
Could you see who was in that white van?
No, we didn't. We didn't see any people. We were looking in the rear view. It was getting a little weird, but you know, we were more focused on what was going on in the air because I wanted to capture footage of the black helicopters that were now on our side of the freeway, the opposite side of the freeway.
Wow, I love it. A white van and now black helicopters. Were the black helicopters looking at you?
It looked like it. Because, you know, they were, you know, when we had first approached Pinal Air Park or Evergreen from the freeway, we'd noticed a couple of black helicopters that were going around and around the, let's call it the compound. So now we're on the opposite side of the freeway, and those helicopters have now come to our side of the freeway. That's pretty noticeable. And they weren't harassing or anything, but one of them flew pretty darn low right over us. Okay, that could be a coincidence, too. All right? Whatever. Now what we have done is we're continuing to head. We lose the GPS signal. That happens, too. But now we're on a no-name road on the opposite side of the freeway. We would pull over. We would park just take some footage. And then continue on to see if we turned east on a dirt road that had it was called Missile something. It's on the video, and we turned right on that road because we thought that's an interesting name. And then that's when we noticed people were following us, because now everyone turned with us on this dirt road. Why would everybody be going down this dirt road? The dirt road actually led to nowhere. I did film at the very end. It had some signs that said, you know, aerial tracking, etc., in this area. So I don't know what they're tracking. I don't know what they're looking at. And it's like a warning sign not to go any further. There were a bunch of mailboxes at the end of this road, but no houses. So we thought that was a little peculiar, and so we pulled over to look like in park in front of the mailboxes to make it look like we were getting our mail. When we did that, those other cars turned around and left and went back to the main road because we got out of our car, and I thought, well, you know, we've got the cameras out. If somebody confronts us, we've got it on camera. I think they did notice that we had cameras. It wasn't hard to not notice that we had cameras in our hands. So we kind of, you know, said, okay, what was that all about? And proceeded to, you know, see if we could find anything else that was substantial in that area. And I will make a note right here. About a week and a half ago, I don't know if any of the listeners have seen this or if you have, but about a week and a half ago, a helicopter that was apparently the pilot was like, it was like a sheriff's helicopter, and three other individuals crashed in that area that we were at, crashed on that mountain range there, and we can't seem to get any more information about that story. I've even gone to CBS, a connection that I have there now, and asked what they thought of that. But back to Evergreen, you know, we continued our filming. We finished up. Like I said, we looked around the area to see if that we could find anything that was odd-looking or any sort of different types of towers out there in the mountain range, et cetera, and we were not successful at finding anything out of the ordinary. Kind of time to leave and get out of there. And we came back home with our footage and began to put it together for the video that you saw. So that's where that happened. I will say this, within a day, I began to get strange phone calls, and I'm not kidding you. People do call me, but I was getting phone calls, very strange, from people who wanted to meet me, like out in Gila Bend, and one guy even said that he was my cousin. He used my cousin's full name, and it's a cousin that I hadn't spoken to in 30 years. And he sounded like he could have even been my cousin. And if he'd run out of gas coming down from California, and if I could go and meet him. And then I took the number down that he called me from, and he said, you know, I said, let me make a couple phone calls, and I'll call you right back. I called him back in about under five minutes. And when I called him back, that number was disconnected.
Now, that's pretty strange. Conceivably, they could have ran your plates. Got a hold of you that way.
And it was to put a little bit of fear into me. And by the way, when that happened, it was I actually tracked down my cousin, and come to find out, my cousin just happened to be in Virginia at the time. He's in his late 60s, and he just
weird. I mean, they would have your cousin's right name and everything. What does your cousin do?
My cousin is a winemaker.
Okay.
Well, maybe I don't know. Maybe the CIA guy buys a wine there.
Isn't that interesting? And why pick? Why choose somebody I haven't spoken to in 30 years? I just thought it was odd. I mean, it was so bizarre. When they called...
Who knows? What would have happened to you if you'd gone out there?
Really good question, isn't it? I mean, he pretended that he and his wife were... They had just run out, and when he called and said, you know, guess who this is? And I was like, I have no idea, who is this? And he was like, surprise! And, you know, we had this elaborate story about he and his wife had run out of gas out in Yuma, and if I could come out there and meet with them and possibly stay over here, they didn't want to be any imposition. And when I said, well, wait a minute, what are you doing in Yuma? Why did you come from Northern California down to Yuma? And he said, well, we were actually coming to surprise you. And I said, well, and right there I was like, okay, this isn't my cousin.
Yeah.
He said, we're just going to surprise you, da, 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 da. And I thought, oh, God, this is so weird. You know, and then he said that they were getting their, they had broken down and they were at a, they gave me the name of a shop that they were at, and that they were just getting the car finished, and then they were going to take off, and they were about 3 hours away from me. So, but if they can't get the car out of the shop, maybe I could meet them down there. The story started to not make any sense. It was really bizarre. And so, you know, like I say, I called. I tracked him down, and he wasn't even in California. He was in Virginia.
Did he sound like the same guy?
He did a little bit. But he's not, it wasn't him. I mean,
you know why I ask, voice recognition.
Right. Well, no, it was a little off, and the vibe was a little different, you know. But if you haven't, maybe that is why, because they chose to use his name, because I hadn't spoken to him in 30 years, so I wouldn't know what his voice sounded like.
Coming up, as we continue our special on chemtrails, we'll bring in movie maker Michael Murphy. Roxy Lopez, very interesting story about Evergreen. And Michael, I understand, has some pretty interesting things to tell us as well. You're listening to the Chemtrails Special on the Jerry Pippin Show. You know, when we pause for a commercial, it's always for somebody who pays the freight, pays the way. Well, I'm going to take time out to talk about somebody who can't pay their way. And that's the stray animals, dogs and cats and other animals, who need your help. And there is a way to help them. Support no-kill animal shelters. It's a gift of life that keeps on giving. These animal shelters are located around the world and maybe in your neighborhood. Animals, they need love. They don't need to be sent someplace and then executed just because they don't have a home. Support the animal shelter that is a no-kill shelter near you. Give them a donation of $10, $25, $50 or more. The money will be well used. The animals will love you for it. So give a gift of love, a gift of life, to that stray dog or cat. Hello, this is Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to our special on chemtrails. In the first half hour, we heard Roxy Lopez tell us about her trip to one of the people who evidently do chemtrail spraying, and that's Evergreen Aviation. They have offices everywhere in the country, and the rumor, of course, has been a long time that they are members or work with the CIA. They even have an office at Will Rogers Airport here in Oklahoma. Roxy told us about her encounter with white vans and even black helicopters. Michael Murphy also has been doing a bit of investigation. He's a movie producer, has a fine film out now called What Are They Spraying? Michael, welcome to the show. And Roxy is here, and we are going to continue our quest for the answers about chemtrails.
Michael, you're doing some great work there, by the way.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we've been working hard to get the issue out.
Michael, we have Roxy Lopez on the line. And first of all, Roxy, how did you run across Michael Murphy? I mean, both of you are film producers, and both of you deal with chemtrails.
I saw some of his mini documentaries before the movie What in the World Are They Spraying came out, and I found great interest in it because he had some great footage in Hawaii, which is, as everyone knows, where I'm from, and I could validate the information that was coming out of Hawaii that he had done some research on, and it really caught my eye right there. And now Mike and I are we're on the same team.
Roxy, let's bring Michael in to the conversation. Michael, how are things going with you out there in Southern California?
Doing fantastic. Thanks thanks for having me on the show, and more importantly, thanks for covering the chemtrail geoengineering issue.
Very you just finished important. Talking to Roxy about her experiences with Evergreen. It was kind of scary. Did you have some similar experiences when you were making the documentary, What in the World Are They Spraying?
Well, we did. As many people have seen, we traveled in many places around the United States, but also into Europe, and we put together an investigative documentary on the issue of geoengineering. So it actually started at an American Association for the Advancement of Science meeting where geoengineers proposed their plans to spray 10 to 20 million tons of toxic aluminum oxide into our sky for what they said was the stated goal of cooling the planet. When asked if these programs had been started, they blatantly denied that any of these programs have been started. But however, in our investigation, we interviewed many scientists, physicians, people who have done a mountain of research in testing that reveals massive contamination of these metals all around the globe where these programs have been started. So yeah, there's without a doubt they have been started, but in terms of going to Evergreen, there were literally thousands of ideas that we had when we started the film. We had a limited amount of time and a limited budget, so really what our goals were to is A, prove that we are being sprayed, and B, that these programs, geoengineering programs, are toxic not only to human health but also the environment. And hopefully we can talk about some of the health and environmental implications and what this means to everybody on the planet.
Michael, the name of your film is What Are They Spraying? And I guess the answer is various things. Is that right?
Right. What we had found, and scientists around the world, and I'll take you up to the first part of our trip, which was in Northern California, and about 10 years ago, people started seeing a mass die-off of trees and having problems growing natural and organic food. So some scientists up in that area started taking pH tests, and what they found was that at a minimum, the pH started increasing in alkalinity. So they've been seeing increases anywhere between 12 to 18 times the normal alkalinity and pH, and anybody knows that knows basic science is aware that when a pH changes in the soil and turns to alkaline, anything that requires an acidic soil will start to die. Exactly what they're seeing up in that area. So the scientists began to do further testing by testing the rain and snow, and what they had found was deeply shocking: massive amounts of aluminum, barium, and strontium. Aluminum will increase the pH of soil, exactly what they're seeing, and these profound changes had started roughly about 12 to 15 years ago when these long trails started to appear in the sky. So deeply concerning to many of us who are aware of geoengineering chemtrail programs.
So this toxicity, this negativity in the soil, is it a byproduct of something else they're trying to do with chem spraying? I mean, like a weather modification or in other words, why are they doing it?
Well, I can talk and say what my co-producer, G. Edward Griffin, had said. And he said, when this issue finally comes out, which it is coming out now, the people behind it will undoubtedly say that this is for the benefit of mankind. So, again, geoengineers are proposing these models, stating that this is something they have to do to cool the planet, literally to mitigate global warming. However, there's much evidence that suggests there are some other applications for it. One, a major application being weather modification. And, you know, it's very interesting because now a lot of people are scratching their heads going, why are we having such erratic and strange weather? Well, I can bring you back to our military and a document from our own military, and it's called Owning the Weather by 2025. That's an expressed interest of our military and our own government. Why would a government want to completely control the weather? Well, there are military and warfare applications. So one who controls the weather can literally bring another nation down to its knees. So we believe it's all related into the globalist agenda and power and control. Another theory, which I believe is also part of this, we know that organic farmers now are having a difficult time growing natural organic food. And a concern for many people is that this might be an agenda to kill off anything that's natural and organic and redesign. There is a new GMO aluminum-resistant feed. So a lot of people believe it could be in part an agenda to literally take control of the food supply. And then the third belief is this. We know that aluminum, barium, and strontium are very toxic. We've seen an incredible increase in aluminum-related illnesses since the inception of these programs. One that I can reference specifically is Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's here in L.A. County, we've seen over a 200% increase in Alzheimer's in a 10-year period. Autism and many other neurological problems, aluminum-related illnesses have gone through the roof. Barium is very toxic as well. Barium lowers our immune system, and it also can increase the heart rate, blood pressure, and give a number of other side effects. Of course, we've seen an increase in strokes and heart attacks, and we spoke with some emergency room physicians who told us that were aware of the issue. They said during heavy spray days, our emergency rooms will be packed with people complaining of heart and chest pains, coming in with heart attacks, and other things. Strontium is a carcinogen, and of course, we've seen an incredible increase in cancers. So we believe that this is in part population reduction, and if anybody questions if this is a true agenda, I would ask them to look into the issue of eugenics and how the Rockefeller family supports this, the Rothschilds, the famous bankers, and then even Bill Gates, whose family has a history of being involved in various eugenics programs. By the way, Bill Gates is a heavy funder into geoengineering programs, and this became public in about January. So, yeah, we believe that there are many ominous agendas behind this, and I call them multi-agenda operations, and there are probably many things that we don't even, that we're not even aware of yet, but again, they're coming to light.
Michael Murphy, you just brought up funding in connection with these chemtrails. Follow the money, as they say, and you get answers. What is going on? I mean, with the money.
Money-wise, these are worldwide programs, and I can go back to what geoengineers have stated, and they said they call these programs stratospheric aerosol geoengineering programs, and David Keith, who is considered to be the number three geoengineer in the world, said aerosol geoengineering is so cheap it could be funded by one of the many billionaires that we have here. So it's not very expensive. We know that these programs are illegal. They're multi-billion, if not trillion-dollar operations, and they're killing people. So I don't think that they're being funded directly through our defense budget, but I think they're more funded through black ops programs and other people like who I had mentioned, the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, perhaps companies who are involved in the GMO seed manufacturing. So, again, they're worldwide.
Why would they have programs where they literally kill people? I mean, Roxy, you can get in on this, too.
Right, and that's a great question. It's one that I scratched my head for a number of years, but we have to realize there is a group of people who call themselves the elite who believe that there's a population problem, and they believe that it's their job to curb that population.
Well, I mean, you to be cruel about it, if it's population reduction, why aren't they doing it in the third world? I mean... Or are they?
Well, you can just look at Africa on that one and AIDS. What makes us think that they're not doing it?
Right. And I can bring you back to what Henry Kissinger said, and he's on tape. And again, eugenics is not something that's hidden. However, it's not promoted by the corporate mainstream media, because it'd be pretty difficult for the president of a nation or a public leader to say, listen, I've got some great news for 15% of the population, the other 85%, you're probably not going to like it because we believe that we have to eliminate you. And bringing it back to what Henry Kissinger, who's very supportive of eugenics programs, he said we have to get rid of, quote-unquote, the useless eaters. And he was referring to people in third world countries. So there definitely is an agenda, and it's actually been publicly stated by many of these people that they plan to use food as a weapon. So, again, I believe that chemtrail geoengineering...
Yeah, why don't they just use birth control, to limit population?
Well, I think that, without a doubt, birth control...
Well, China's doing that.
Well, in China, they do limit it to 2 children, I think.
And I know it can be hard to stomach, but I would encourage you to go ahead and look into this. And let's go ahead and look at Bill Gates' father, who actually was intimately involved with Margaret Sanger, who established Planned Parenthood for what she said was to get rid of, quote-unquote, the Negro problem. So we're dealing with people who believe that people in third world countries and people who have less income should be eliminated from the earth. So it's hard for people like you, I think, to believe this because you're a good person.
No, Michael, I understand what you're saying, and it's not unthinkable. A lot of people it is. It's not for me. I think we're pretty rotten sometimes. I mean, humanity in general. But, I mean, it's just hard for me to buy that they're mass murderers.
Well, I don't think that they were sitting around saying what's the most effective way to reduce the population. I really think they were sitting down and they said, let's start aerosol geoengineering programs for many. Again, they're multi-agenda operations. And when the issue of toxicity came up, they probably said, this is going to be very toxic to human health. And the people who are supportive of eugenics probably said, you know what? I didn't think of that, but that would fit right in with our agenda. So I don't think it's again, the only agenda. And I think that the number one reason that they're doing this is for weather modification, weather control, in the GMO seed connection. But I think that eugenics, which we know without a doubt, is an agenda of the few who call themselves the elite, including Bill Gates, who, again, is a funder of geoengineering. So I think it's just something that fits right in line. I don't think it was their number one objective, but it certainly is not what a lot of these people behind the program mind doing.
One thing that I want to interject here is that science and the geoengineers have already been quoted as saying that in the name of science, there is little regard for humans, if you will, and the side effects that could cause death to those who are weak, the young, the elderly, the disabled. There's no regard for that. And science should not be, no one should be quoted in the scientific community as saying something as rash as that. The other thing that, just to back up what Michael is talking about, in Congress, there's a agricultural alert action item, weather modification and mitigation bills set for passage early in 2009. You have U.S. Senate Bill 1807, 2191, 3036, 3445. This is the government, it seems to be aware. You've got the continuation of H.R. 2977, which was in the 107th Congress first session, which was in regards to Dennis Kucinich had put this forward. This was all about weather modifications. The word chemtrail was actually used, and the side effects were listed. Now, this has taken place in 2009. It's now called H.R. 2420, and they're continuing the fight on this. And obviously, within the government, there's not enough support, because Kucinich has continued to try to get this language into a bill to prevent, you know, such things as, you know, poisoning the planet, poisoning people, etc., without going down the list of the actual terminology in geoengineering. And the World Meteorological Organization has documents as well that state, and I'll read it right from there, phenomena caused by weather modification. No confidence can be placed, quote, no confidence can be placed at this time in the use of cloud seeding to reduce the strength of typhoons and tropical storms. Does that mean that they've already been trying to reduce the strength of typhoons and tropical storms? I mean, it's right there. Attempts to reduce lightning by seeding have not been shown to be effective, blah, 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 blah. They go on and on and on about all this money that is being spent, and for years and years and years. I mean, this goes way back. And then as far as what Michael was mentioning in regard to the weather as a force multiplier, owning the weather by 2025, that is a military application. There's a lot of proof that even inside of our own government, you've got there are some eyebrows being raised right out of John Hopkins. They have something called the Master of Science in Energy Policy and Climate. Quote unquote, the program will prepare the next generation of interdisciplinary professionals to address the challenges of climate change and sustainable energy systems. Graduates will be able to demonstrate and understand the science related to climate changing and global warming, knowledge of the impacts, climate change, vulnerability of natural systems, and the built environment, and methods for adaptation. They are testing and experimenting, and the side effects, as we go back to science, is it's in the name of science, so no regard for humanity.
And I'm going to back Roxy up on that. I mean, you just threw out an incredible amount of powerful material. Geoengineers are very open about the risks, and they said in geoengineering, if we do it, however we know it's already going on, they said there are going to be winners and losers. Now, ozone depletion is one of the consequences. And it's exactly what we're beginning to see, complete destruction of the ozone. When addressed about the toxicity of aluminum oxide, and this was in the film, What in the World Are They Spraying?, they stated, well, we haven't done any tests, so there could be something terrible that we might find tomorrow that we haven't looked at. And that was a blatant lie, because we provided documentation that nano-sized particles of aluminum being sprayed as aerosols would be extremely toxic to human health and ecosystems. So it's exactly what we're seeing. And what they're doing, they're selling programs to the general public stating that this is for the greater good of the greater number of society. However, it is not for the benefit of us. It's for the benefit of a select few who call themselves the elite, and they have definite...
Michael agenda. And Roxy, something troubles me about this. It's been going on for several decades now, this experimenting. And I don't care how, high-minded you are, if you cause death, accidental death, that's a crime. I mean, people are in jail over things like that. So who's doing this? I mean, is it corporate America? Is it the Defense Department? I know they get some money from the Defense Department, so I guess they would be liable as well. In other words... who are the culprits? What's going on here?
Well, Bill Gates, again, is funding geoengineering, so he is a billionaire, but that's not such an easy question, because we know that there's military involvement. There have been pictures of military KC-135 being sprayed. However, we know also that there are many different corporations involved. And again, I'll go back to the GMO food, aluminum-resistant seed. So we believe that there are... it's not such an easy question. There are many different governments around the world. We know it's every NATO country who's involved, and then, you know, a handful of other countries, but many different corporations who are involved in a lot of different capacities. I'll bring back a patent typically referred to as the Welsbach patent, and that's owned by Hughes Aircraft, and it's actually a device for specifically spraying aluminum oxide out of airplanes. So, again, the list is very long of those involved, and I hope to address that in the next film.
Yeah, I was looking at that patent information the other day. It's right there from the patent office. And states pretty clearly what they're up to. You know, this thing, the United States is best at it, but it's not only a United States thing, where you take the wishes of corporate America, you pass out a little taxpayer money, a little defense money, get them working on something that helps you, like weather wars or whatever, and, you know, all of a sudden you got a whole bunch of people involved, and nobody wants to be liable, so you got a pretty good reason for keeping it a secret. You know what I mean?
That's correct, Jerry. You know, even on a basic level, there's a study out of Arizona at one of the colleges working on weather modification, and they spent, it's a very long document, but they spend four paragraphs discussing why this can't get out to the general public. The why was exactly where you're going, the liability factor, because you know, if you had a flood in an area that you weren't supposed to have a flood in, let's say, and that was performed by a weather modification experiment, well, then people in that area, their insurance policies, just let's say on a residential home, would cover because it wouldn't fall under the quote-unquote force majeure clause in insurance policies, which means act of God. You can't get covered on something if it's an act of God. That's old hat. Everyone knows that. So if you could prove that it was weather modification experimentation, you'd have a big liability on your hands as well, financial.
Either one of you ever talked to a high-profile attorney? I mean, somebody like a Jerry Spence or somebody who would like to go after these chemical companies and the government itself and prove that they're doing harm? I mean, it seems like a perfect case. And you know, through discovery, a lot of stuff would come out. They could win a lot of money and maybe make them stop it, or at least explain what they're doing, be a little more open.
Yes, I've been in contact. A number of people from around the world have actually contacted me in regards to this. And there are some attorneys working on class action lawsuits and looking for more investigators and people to bring more proof into the issue. Of course, we have a mountain of proof. So, yeah, people are moving forward. And I think, Jerry, you brought up a great issue, and that's the issue of accountability. We went a number of years where these criminal elite, have gotten away with doing some very harmful things to the general public and without the public consent. I honestly believe that this is going to turn the tides because, A, this movement is growing like a wildfire. Millions of people are waking up. Especially in the past year. B, you can't hide it. There is toxic, measurable fallout of these substances where the spraying is occurring. And then C, things are coming to light now. So I think we're in a season where we will see accountability to this, but I want to encourage everybody who's listening today to research this, look into this, watch the film, and then go to the various websites that are effective, get well-versed on this, and get involved, because the future of humanity is definitely dependent on this. We're seeing some great destruction from these programs.
Michael Murphy, I need you to hang around. We're going to talk to Mark McCandish next, and we'll be back with you in a little bit.
Sounds fantastic. Thanks, Jerry.
Okay, Mark McCandish is at ground zero, evidently, of some of the chemtrail violations and contamination near Mount Shasta up in Northern California.
Even if you say, well, very poor stream, you might have gotten only 300. But even so, there's only 30 bugs here.
In the same stream you're looking at about 1,000, how many years ago were you finding it?
About 20 years ago, this had about 1,000.
This is from a snow surface at Mount Shasta.
Mm-hmm.
61,100 micrograms per liter of aluminum. This is just ordinary snow water. Mm-hmm. And people are drinking this stuff when they're hiking on the mountain. And remember, government action is required at 1,000. This is 61 times over the government limit, and our hikers are drinking this poisonous water on Mount Shasta Mountain itself.
God.
Strontium, 383. Barium strontium will take away from your bone structure, make for weak bone structure. The aluminum, though, that's scary. You know, what is it? Alzheimer's, autism, gosh knows what that's doing.
A number of other things, neurologic.
You're listening to our special report on chemtrails. I'm Jerry Pippin. Investigator and author Anthony Sanchez.
The name of the book is UFO Highway. I found that although I was diverging into multiple areas of UFO research, I kept finding myself back on the same road. And I found that all these different aspects of ufology were interconnected. So I decided to call the book UFO Highway.
This is the book that could not wait for a regular publisher. It had to be released now. The information is so sensitive, so shocking, so well researched. Colonel X comes from the dark shadows for the light of truth. The inside story of Area 51 and the challenging truth about extraterrestrials. The e-book of the century, now on sale. For information and to order, go to UFOHighway.com. Chemtrails, Episode 3.
And I don't see how anybody who's got their eyes open and their mind open can come to any other conclusion but that somebody is spending a lot of money and effort to spray the planet. I know that whenever it's finally discovered, and it will be, the people who are doing it will undoubtedly say, oh, well, we did it for you folks. It's for the greater good of the greater number. It's for the society. It's probably to prevent global warming. But in my humble opinion, it's not in your good or mine at all. I don't know what it is, but we'll soon find out.
Long past time to make this issue known to the public. There have been many videos made. There have been many statements made. A lot of websites put on the internet exposing the truth about this issue, but none of them have really put it all together. And it's past time for that to happen. They can't do it alone, and I can't do it alone with them. We need your help. We've got to get it out. We've got to get it out fast. But the rest of it needs to be done, and it needs to be done quickly. If you want to become a part of this project yourself and really help to make a difference in the world, we need your help.
That's a little bit of the audio from the trailer, What in the World Are They Spraying? Michael Murphy, who is instrumental in that production. We'll be back with us again for Episode 4, but right now, let's get to Episode 3 and a new guest. Mark McCandish is on the line from Northern California, and we have Roxy Lopez. Mark, she's on the line from near Phoenix.
Well, hi, Roxy.
Well, hi, Mark.
Great to talk to you again.
It's nice to talk to you.
To our listeners, the reason we asked Mark on the air is he has quite a background, really, in commercial aviation. In conceptual art, he used to, make these drawings for these aircraft companies on ideas and concepts of new aircraft, and he's very good at it. And as a result of that, he knows a lot about airplanes. So that's why I wanted him on. I wanted him to tell us what kind of airplanes are doing the spraying. I mean, what's the requirement?
I bought a very powerful set of Barska binoculars. A couple years ago, 80 by 20, which is a huge set of binoculars. The primary optics on them are almost 3 inches in diameter out in front. Looks like something from a cartoon. But anyway, I was able to spend a lot of time watching the planes that fly over my area here in Redding, California. It's about 2.5 hours north of Sacramento. And we see a tremendous amount of this kind of geoengineering chemtrail activity here, and I'm not exactly sure why, but I'm assuming it has to do with the fact that we are sort of right in between two mountain ranges, the Coastal Mountain Range and the Sierra Nevadas, which sort of converge right at the northern end of California. But anyway,
that's a huge watershed for all of California, Mark.
Well, it is. Yes, we have all kinds of canals and things that go from Northern California down to the southern part of the state, as you probably know. We also have one of the largest hydroelectric facilities in the United States here next to Hoover Dam, which is Shasta Dam and the Shasta Reservoir. The aircraft that I've seen are most often seem to be Boeing-produced aircraft. I've seen everything from 747s to 767s, 737s. Surprisingly, I've even seen a military KC-135, one of the later generations of that aircraft with the larger turbofan engines. that was spraying five trails, not just one from each engine, but it was a an in-flight refueling aircraft and has been used for many years by the Air Force for in-flight refueling of its military aircraft. And I've seen that aircraft spraying chemtrails also. Unusually, I've noted that these aircraft, in many instances, have no livery. That is to say, they have no airliner logos on them. They don't have any markings. Of course, at that altitude, it's really difficult, especially when you're looking directly up underneath them, to see any kind of bureau numbers or anything of that nature, because it would just be too small. But in just about every single instance, the aircraft, at least the larger aircraft that I've noted that we're spraying, seem to have an all-white undersurface or ventral surface. The underside of the wings, the engines, the belly of the fuselage, all were painted white. And the upper half of the aircraft were painted a medium blue. It's about the same color blue you'd find on a can of Pepsi-Cola.
I've heard about these planes with that special white paint job before. Why do you think they're doing that? I mean, painting, what's the significance of this white paint? Do you know?
Well, I've been watching the aircraft for at least 2 years, because it suddenly occurred to me that there was something unusual going on here. It seemed to have started somewhere right around the end of the 1990s, around 2000, 2001, when we really started to see a lot of the activity. And I'd heard people mentioning things like chemtrails on the radio, and I thought that it seemed a little strange at first, but I did notice some of these persistent contrails or chemtrails back around 2001, and I noticed that a day later the headline on the local paper, which is the Redding Record Searchlight here in my part of the state, indicated that there were dozens of people who'd shown up at local hospitals complaining of respiratory distress. And so I thought, my God, I wonder if there's some kind of connection here. So at that point I started watching the amount of activity that was occurring in the sky, and would from time to time call the local Department of Health, the local Air Quality Resources Board, and find out what the particulate levels were at the different sensing sites around the northern part of the state. And you could see a direct correlation between the number of patients going into the hospitals and the amount of particulate that was in the air within a day or so after these spraying campaigns would occur. So, that prompted me to start looking at things like the toxicity of the different kinds of particles. I went over to Clifford Carnicom's website that has a lot of information, a lot of data about chemtrails, and started to make note of the kind of particulate that was being used in these chemtrails. Most often seemed to be aluminum oxide nanoparticles. There was some barium, some strontium, some copper sulfate, I believe. Started looking up the idea of whether there was any kind of toxicity to these materials. And I actually, plugged in a Google search engine, the phrase toxicity of aluminum oxide nanoparticles, and I came up with all kinds of research papers that have been conducted all the way back to 1993 by the Air Force Research Laboratory, Human Effectiveness Directorate, Biosciences and Protection Division at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and other places. And so it was clear from looking at these studies, one of which was called In Vitro Toxicity of Aluminum Nanoparticles in Rat Alveolar Macrophages. Basically, that's a real fancy way of saying, how do aluminum oxide nanoparticles affect the white blood cells in rats? And what they found was that under exposure to certain sizes of aluminum oxide nanoparticles, in this particular instance they were experimenting with 50, 80, and 120 nanometer size particles, which are much smaller than a grain of salt, they were finding that these particles would demonstrate significant delayed toxicity when these animals were exposed to these kinds of materials. And in fact, one of the things about your immune system, and most people may not know this, is that the white blood cells are actually kind of like an amoeba. They're sort of a flexible shape, and they can basically swim up to and sort of engulf a pathogen, a germ, or some kind of toxic material that might be in your system, and it's called phagocytosis. And what they were finding in these rats was that when they were exposed to these particles, that the ability of the white blood cells to perform this function in the immune system was dramatically reduced. And so, in effect, what they were doing is they're knocking down the ability of the immune system to go after toxins and pathogens in the environment, particularly within the body of the rat. And, you know, theoretically, also this would happen to people. And so then I expanded my research to see if there were other things, other kinds of toxicity that were being manifest by the use of these particles. And in fact, they were finding that the same kind of material would produce delayed seed production, toxicity in certain kinds of plants. You could suppress the productivity of crops. You could do all kinds of things with this material by spraying it in the atmosphere and allow it to basically settle out of the atmosphere onto the ground and, you know, expose people, animals, invertebrates in the soil. You could do all kinds of damage with this material, and they know it. There's no question about it. You can see it in the research papers that they put together on this.
Mark and Roxy, if you want to get in on this, please do. The first question I have here is, why are they doing this? I mean, are they trying to kill people, kill crops, change the weather? I know pure scientists, probably the Puritans among them, would just like to know. But, I mean, there's probably some practical reason. Either of you know or have an idea?
I think it's multi-layers. And as I had said earlier, being that at the conference of the geoengineers, that they had stated that, you know, all in the name of science, why they're doing all of these projects, and that little regard for humanity at the other end of that spectrum, because, you know, what they'll learn from this will, you know, save the day later on down the road. I know that there are those who subscribe to, you know, a global, you know, genocide type thing. I don't have the proof of that in my own research, even as much as I have collectively with other researchers. I don't know that would be a main mission, but I do like what Mike Murphy had said, that it might have, with a certain sector of the elites, it might fit into perhaps one of their game plans, as far as, you know, genocide goes, and a way to do it. I do think that what we're coming across are many, many different opportunists. And, you know, owning the weather by 2025 pretty much spills it out. You know, it's a military application, and if you own the weather, it's like anything else. You know, they already own the money, and that's already been proven. If you own the weather, you can use it you can control the people. You know, you can cause drought in an area, and keep in mind, why would they do that? I can answer that later, but you can cause drought in an area to put out maybe farmers. Maybe the agenda with Monsanto and GMO, even though it's a beefed up seed to be able to handle acidic soils or imbalanced pH soils and so forth and so forth, again, follow the money. You know, could it be a global, you know, seed that every commercial grower has to participate in? Therefore, there's money, 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 money. And then as far as weather modification goes, controlling the weather, the word control right there, controlling the weather. Why would we need, or who would need, the military, the government, the elites, the corporations, why would we even have a need to control the weather? Is there a reason to control the weather? Is there something going on that we need to do that? Do we need more water? Do we, you know, do we need to block the sun in this cycle that the sun is in? Is that all real? Is global warming real? Is an ice age, a mini ice age real? Is there, you know, it can appear to be different programs that are trying to, quote unquote, save the planet, but with the research involved, it doesn't appear to be that way. I'm an open-minded individual as well, and I open my mind to both sides of the case. But the more I delve in, and the more research that I come across, and the more proof, here's the one of the questions that I ask. I ask if indeed things like weather modification or controlling the weather or global dimming or global warming and trying to assist the planet with global, why is it all such a secret? I mean, they denied us even the plausibility that these chemtrails in the sky that were exploding into giant clouds in front of people, you know, with for the citizens who don't know any better what that is, and what it really clouding up the skies, milky white side. Why would they take a good, perfectly good sunny day and trash it for 4 days in a row? But then for years, they, if you went to any of your representatives or you started poking around and asking around, they, including the mainstream media, would just say that you're nuts. That's just regular air traffic, and there's just more of it. That's all. You know, go back to bed.
Listening to Roxy, it sounds pretty nefarious. Mark, are you in agreement? Do you see it like she does?
Well, it certainly has that potential. I mean, I've been looking at some of the war and national defense, chemical and biological warfare statutes under Title 50 of the United States Code, subchapter 32, written as recent as May of 2009. And it talks about open-air testing, disposal, that there needs to be presidential determination, that it has to be reported to Congress. And so I think that under the Freedom of Information Act, if these things are, in fact, required to be reported, that a FOIA request can be made so that these things can be brought out into the open. I mean, I'm looking at the statute right here, and it says that none of the funds authorized to be appropriated in this act or by any other act may be used for the transportation of any lethal chemical or any biological warfare agent to or from any military installation in the U.S. or in the open-air testing of such agents within the United States or the disposal of such agent within the United States until the following procedures have been implemented. And then it gives you a list of all the ways they can go ahead and do that, one of which is that the Secretary of Defense has to be determined that the transportation or testing can be is made and is necessary in the interest of national security. The Secretary has brought the particulars and of the proposed transportation testing and disposal to the attention of the Secretary of Health and Human Services. So right there, you can see that if this stuff is being done, these different departments, these different agencies have to be given notice. Now, it's obviously being used. It's obviously being dispensed. So my idea, my suggestion would be to get a hold of an attorney like Tom Slade, who's showed some interest in this, get him involved in a FOIA request. Apparently the funding is available from what I've been told to send a Freedom of Information request to the Secretary of Health and Human Services to find out what the heck is going on and why are they doing it.
Mark, mostly we've been talking about commercial companies under contract to the Defense Department and other places to do the chem spraying, but you mentioned the big super tankers, the refuelers that are being used as well by the military, by the Air Force namely. And I was just thinking about the huge bird and fish kill that happened in Arkansas and Louisiana and a few other places. It just so happens some of those super tankers are based there at North Little Rock Air Force Base. Been by there many times on I-40. You can see it right over there. I mean, we hear about HAARP causing these problems, but maybe it was just a spray that went bad, either accidentally or on purpose. I don't know.
Well, I know from looking at Google Earth that this chemical weapons base that's south of Little Rock on the map there, there was an allegation.
Pine Bluff, Arkansas, the Pine Bluff Arsenal.
Pine Bluff, yes.
Yeah, that came from that Russian reporter or disinformation specialist. I don't know if it's a man or a woman.
That's your fault.
Yeah, that's it. We like to read the stuff because it's pretty sensational, but and most of it's never turned out to be true, alleging that I think some of the poisonous gases that we got from Iraq, which I don't think we did, but maybe we did. Supposedly we got it undercover there at Pine Bluff, and that's what killed those birds. Anyway, I wonder what would happen if Roxy took her video camera and went down to the gates at Pine Bluff, Arkansas. I mean, she couldn't even get into Evergreen Aviation.
Yeah, I wonder myself. I mean, that's a very secure installation, but, you know, the one flaw in the statement that was made in these sort of mildly propagandistic statements by Sorcha Fall was that these animal deaths were caused by a bioweapons leak from an aircraft flying out of Pine Bluff. And if you look at Pine Bluff on Google Earth, you can see that there's no doggone runway there. So, I mean, you can see right there, you know, if it came out of Pine Bluff and there's no runway, then somebody's not checking their
facts. Well, frankly, we followed this Russian and the reports on the Internet, and nothing's ever turned out.
You know, there's nothing wrong with investigating, and I certainly have to hand it to Roxy for having the guts to go right up to the gate and say, what are you guys doing here? And if it's okay, why can't I take some pictures? I mean, you can see the upper fuselage section and the vertical stabilizer on these what ordinarily would be looked at as commercial airliners that are being worked on, prepped, refueled, or reloaded with whatever it is they're spraying right there in just northwest of Tucson at this airfield there. You can see it on Google Earth. You can see all the tanks that they store the gases and materials in. You know, and I've looked at this from every way that I can think of to try and figure out why. Why are they doing this? I mean, I looked at and found studies that were done for both the Army and for the Air Force on the kind of chemistry that you find, the ignition properties and combustion chemistry of explosives used in jet fuel. JP-10 is what they were calling it, where they were using aluminum oxide nanoparticles, or what they call energetic materials, in fuel, not only as a way of enhancing combustion efficiency and increasing the range and the thrust of aircraft that employ this kind of fuel. And you can clearly see that there are reasons why they would want to investigate this. But, just for those of us who tend to slide over into the conspiracy side of things from time to time, there was a lot of talk about thermite explosives being used to bring down the World Trade Center in 2001. And, in fact, there was a scientist, Stephen Jones from BYU, that did find unequivocal evidence, spectrographically speaking, of aluminum oxide nanoparticles in the residue of the World Trade Center that was brought down. Now, it turns out that aluminum oxide in nanoparticle form, when it's combined with explosives, dramatically increases the temperature and the yield of the explosive potential of any kind of explosives. But they're finding that it also increases and enhances the burn efficiency of certain kinds of jet propellants, so liquid fuels. And so you can see how experimentally this might cover a number of different bases. Like Roxy was saying, it might enhance the range of aircraft by combining this. There's some studies as much as 40% by weight in the fuel. But of course, you know, once these nanoparticles of aluminum oxide go through the combustion system of jet engine, it winds up being released almost in gaseous form, at 1800 degrees Kelvin is the temperature some of these engines burn at. And so, you have these vapors of aluminum that then get into the air. Now, I could see where, the overlapping use could be that it makes the upper atmosphere more reflective of solar energy. It might help to reduce the temperature. I mean, here in Redding, we are... it's not unusual for us to see summertime temperatures in August, September of 110, 115 degrees sometimes. I've even seen it, I think in 97 it got up to 117 degrees one day. But on the days when they spray this stuff overhead and it starts to sort of, cover the sky in this haze, there's about a 10 to 15 degree reduction in the temperature locally, which is, of course it makes it a lot more comfortable, but the sky has a white haze in it. You can't see the mountains, 50 normally could.
Mark McCandish and Roxy Lopez with us. We're talking about chemtrails. In our next episode, Michael Murphy, the filmmaker, will be back, and we all three will talk. But let's close out this part of the program with a little bit more from the audio soundtrack, the trailer for Michael Murphy's film, What in the World Are They Spraying?
I'd like to talk for a minute about an issue that's getting more and more attention. That's the issue which scientifically is called stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, also called the chemtrail issue.
Oh my God. Holy, there's one, two, oh my God.
Strange substance found by a Southwest Arkansas man be part of a government test? Well, that's the question at the heart of a phenomenon called chemtrails, now getting widespread attention.
Well, they say the government is dumping chemicals on us to control or manipulate the weather.
And they say the unusual-looking jet trails in the sky are actually chemical-laden chemtrails.
The survival of the human race, literally, is at stake. The physical survival. The level of health that people will enjoy, the survival of the planet. If you're concerned about the environment, this is your issue. And yet most people have no idea that it's even going on.
It is called geoengineering, fighting global warming by putting a chemical dust in the atmosphere and reflecting harmful radiation back into space.
You could use barium oxide, for example, which makes big fluffy clouds. You could use tiny little bits of aluminum, which is benign in the environment, and essentially manage the climate.
That is not rain. That is not snow. Believe it or not, military aircraft flying through the region is dropping chaff, small bits of aluminum. Sometimes it's made of plastic or even italicized paper products, but it's used as an anti-radar issue, and obviously they're up there practicing. Now, they won't confirm that, but I was in the Marine Corps for many years, and I'll tell you right now, that's what it is.
And tonight, one woman says the government's own data shows the chemicals are showing up in our drinking water.
I'd like to take an opportunity here to talk to you about our websites. We've been adding programs and adding programs, and sometimes it's difficult to find what you're looking for. First of all, we have a search mechanism on each of our websites, and you can click, like if it's jerrypippin.com or if ipodshows.net, just search the websites, put in the name of what you're looking for, and it will come up. Check us out, won't you? Often. This is Jerry Pippin. We're wrapping up our first program on chemtrails with this final segment. We've been talking with Roxy Lopez and Michael Murphy, as well as Mark Candish. Mark, I want to bring Michael Murphy into the conversation here in a minute. But first of all, they just had a $35 billion contract for big supertankers from Boeing. We're talking about we don't have any money. Yeah, we can afford $35 billion for Boeing for these tankers when we already have big tankers. So I don't know what that's about. Maybe that's the way they continue chemtrail spraying. Who knows? Speaking of chemtrail spraying, is this expensive? It must be.
Well, not nearly as expensive as stockpiling and flying the planes around to disperse the levels of material that we're seeing in the atmosphere. I mean, it must be in the billions of dollars. I can't help wondering if something in this TARP funding, something in the funding that Ben Bernanke said he couldn't reveal, where the money went, that disappeared after these billions and billions of dollars were supposedly put up to bail out these different corporations. I can't help but wonder if some of those billions of dollars was actually being poured into this program. So, obviously somebody thinks that this is a very big priority, and just exactly why that is, there doesn't seem to be any revelation of.
Mark, you're up in Northern California. Let's bring in someone from Southern California, from Los Angeles. Let's bring back Michael Murphy. Michael?
That's right. Mark, how are you? And it's my good friend Mark from Northern California. We've met before. And,
hi, Mike.
Actually been on panels. How are you?
Great. It's great to hear you again.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for for all your work in exposing this crime.
How about the money part, Michael? Did you get into that in your investigation when you made your documentary?
In terms of the film, no. And again, we could have made a film that lasted for about 20 hours, you know, and still not covered everything. So, again, our agenda was a two-point agenda. A, prove that these programs are real and are ongoing, and then B, prove that they're a threat to human health and ecology. And we conclusively did that, and as a result, we've woken up millions of people since our release just this past October. However, again, that opens up the door for some more questions that many people are asking me, and I think they're all valid and need to be covered. So perhaps, if the opportunity arises, we'll do a part two of What in the World Are They Spraying, where that question will definitely be addressed. And, God, Mark, I'd love to have you be a part of that project and interview you if I get the opportunity.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate the offer, and I'd be happy to do so. I can print out the dozens of documents that I found that not only talk about the patents that are behind some of this stuff, which you also mentioned in the film, but also the different studies that look at the toxicity to animal life, plant life, to invertebrates in the soil. We have one researcher up in Northern California, I think you included in the film, that was saying that in some areas of Northern California, in the mountains in particular, they're seeing as much as a 97% die-off of the invertebrates in the soil and in the water systems. And these are the very little bugs and critters that the fish and the frogs and everything live on just to sustain themselves in these aquatic systems. So it's very serious. I mean, they're having a dramatic effect on the local biosphere.
Yeah, it is. And one thing that you mentioned, the salmon run up in Northern California, my understanding is that it has declined by 94%. So there's just 4 or 6% of the salmon run. Now, Francis Mangles, who is a biologist and well aware of this, he's been doing a number of tests which reveal these toxins. And also, he did a test in a video that I did with him where we did test for bugs in a stream, and they had a decline. I believe it was over a 90% decline in the little in the stream. And he said when he catches the rare fish that he does now and cuts open their bellies, he said there's nothing in their stomach, and he said the fish are literally starving to death. So we're in a serious crisis.
Well, it's true. I mean, to have one individual making such claims would be one thing, but if you go into the local fly and tackle shops and you talk to some of the people who are fishing enthusiasts around here, every person I've talked to a man, it says there aren't any fish. They're dead. They're gone. They're not around. I know one young lady that I see on a regular basis at the sandwich shop where I eat every day who said that and she's an avid fishing person, indicated that there were no fish up there in the lakes this summer. She couldn't catch anything. And to me, that's frightening. I mean, last summer we saw an article in a local newspaper saying that marine biologists up and down the coast of California are finding sea lions washing ashore that are starving to death, that they're having to pump food and gruel and stuff into their stomachs just to keep them alive because there are no fish coming out of the streams that they can live on. In fact, they were having a problem with one, I think it was the Columbia River, where they're having sea lions that were swimming upstream looking for fish, and they were coming all the way up to some of the dams, the hydroelectric systems along the Columbia River in Oregon and Washington State, and the local wildlife service was debating whether or not to shoot them because they were interfering with the sports fishermen in the area. I mean, you can see that creatures who are accustomed to having a food resource in the local environment will adapt and move and migrate to try and survive, and they're going to places they've never been seen before.
Yes, and Mark, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, a study that came out, I believe it was perhaps in May or June of this past year, that showed extremely high levels of aluminum in whales.
Yeah.
So this is not only affecting streams and wildlife and humans here on the mainland, but it also appears to be inhabiting the oceans and the sea life in the ocean.
Well, it's true, and of course, whales eat plankton, which includes microorganisms, both plant and animal microorganisms. You have zooplankton, which are little animals like baby shrimp and stuff, and you have phytoplankton, which are, of course, plants like algae and fungus and things like that. So, you know, if they're having, they're actually testing positive for higher levels of aluminum, it shows that this kind of activity, if not being conducted directly over the ocean, is eventually affecting the ocean because of the waters that's coming out of the watershed and the mountains and areas on land that eventually reach the ocean. So, to me, I think the consequences are going to be catastrophic over the long haul. And, you know, I think there should be some kind of an international conference with scientists and concerned citizens coming together demanding from the governments of the world, what in the devil are you doing?
What is going on? Of course, these entities are flat out denying that these programs have been started, simply saying that we're seeing normal contrails. However, the evidence, which there's a mountain of, certainly suggests much differently, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And, you know, I've been around aircraft all my life. I spent the better part of 30 years creating conceptual art for a number of defense contractors and aerospace companies in California and other parts of the country. I've worked on jet aircraft. I've got stick time in four or five different military fighters as part of the Air Force art program, media orientation rides and things. I've been around these kind of people. I've been around that kind of environment for most of my life. And so I can tell you that the kinds of, you know, these so-called contrails that persist are not, in fact, condensation trails. It's not moisture from the jet engines, you know, heat shocking the atmosphere and causing the moisture to sort of condense out. This is actually some kind of a chemical byproduct that's occurring in the combustion in these engines that are being that are using these nanoparticles, and it's having an influence on the environment. You know, they a typical contrail, condensation trail, will last for maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute tops, and then it dissipates. But these trails persist for sometimes hours, drifting for miles and miles. In fact, I've noticed, I have relatives living on the East Coast, that I notice that when we see a heavy chemtrail aerosol spraying campaign and geoengineering occurring here in Northern California, that within 5 to 6 days, my relatives on the East Coast and friends that I have in Illinois and other areas like that are seeing tremendously higher levels of precipitation. And in the wintertime, it comes down as snow and freezing rain. But they're seeing snow levels in Massachusetts that are comparable to some of the, you know, 2-3 feet of snow that they saw back in the 1960s. It's unheard of.
Mark and Michael, I'm going to bring Roxy back into the conversation here. Roxy, Michael, as you just heard, was talking about, and so was Mark, about, you know, casualties in the food chain. I mean, all kinds of animals dying and not getting proper food and aluminum poisoning and on and on. So we're just not talking about human casualties. Earlier we addressed this. Maybe we could get back to it a little bit, Roxy. Do you think these scientists, you know, they know it. They just don't care.
The more I read into a lot of their own manuals and their own studies, the more I realize that, you know, science is just, you know, you could have hit the nail on the head. They're just so involved in their own world of weather modification in a number of different areas as far as what the research is. But every bit of studies that I read that they have, they always comment on, for instance, there's one right here that says only hygroscopic agents should be used that pose no environmental and health problems. So they continually bring that up as if it's a concern or it's on their minds. But then they go on for paragraphs and paragraphs in all of these studies to say what they have been working on, what's not working, and this has gone on for 50 years, you know. I think that science has got its head wrapped in its own little world.
Michael, maybe you can identify with this statement. Since you're in the movie business, it seems like They've created their own Frankenstein.
Well, they have, you know, and I want to bring the audience back to a quote by, again, geoengineer David Keith, who is considered to be the number three geoengineer in the world. And he was quoted as saying this: geoengineering gives man the power of God. I'm going to repeat that because it's kind of shocking. It said, geoengineering gives man the power of God. Well, I don't want somebody, a scientist, who gets paid hundreds of thousands of dollars or perhaps maybe even millions of dollars to have that kind of power because, again, there can be some terrible consequences and are some terrible consequences associated with the science.
Well, planetary engineering is not a new idea. I mean, one of my favorite science fiction writers when I was growing up, Robert A. Heinlein, wrote about planetary engineering, mainly about life on Mars and making the atmosphere more friendly to human beings and things like that. So it's not a new idea.
Well, it's not a new idea, and weather modification goes back actually for hundreds of years. There was a, back in Vietnam, the U.S. military flooded out the Ho Chi Minh Trail by using weather modification, and they dumped over 13 feet of rain in less than an hour. So they had, you know, pretty powerful technology back then. Here we are several years later, and we can only wonder what kind of technology they have today. And what it appears, it's control. These people want the power of God. They literally want to control the planet. They're aggressively going after this. And then you throw in the thousands and thousands, I'm sorry, I should be saying billions and billions of dollars associated with these programs. You just have a recipe for disaster and corruption.
Yes, you do. Money always tweaks it, doesn't it? And there's a lot of money. You're absolutely right. Every, again, study that I've been doing, they talk about millions and millions of dollars for just one small practice that they're doing that month or whatever. So where is all, you know, that's another good question. Where is all this money coming from?
Well, I mean, some of it's coming from black budgets, secret agencies, but corporations, they have lots of research and development money. And so it's coming from there and various other places. Really, it's a kind of a perfect storm, don't you think, of financial interest?
I really do. I know that Michael does as well. See, I also think, and I'm just going to throw this out there, I also think that if we move this forward, we open a case, we open the patents, we really put it to not only our representatives, people who are supposed to be representing the vote of the people, but bring it on. You know, if we really push this, this isn't just about geoengineering. This is, as you guys well know, this is a huge picture. This is all about how our money system works, how our food system works, how our quality of air, water works, our health programs work. This is all connected, and I think that in any area that we can open a case, I think that there'll be many other cases that'll be opened up in other areas, not just geoengineering, not just biochemical warfare, not just, you know, there's just other individuals, other groups can open up cases as well, because I think that this is such an elaborate, as Michael said, this is all about control. It's about control of everything. I mean, really, everything we do. Our minds, the way we work, the way we practice, the way we eat, the way we spend our spare time. It's all so controlled, and it's just enough is enough.
Michael Murphy, do you have any closing comments?
Absolutely. What this is, it's man taking what was once under the authority of our creator, nature, wanting to control the entire food supply, even the weather. So, you know, I'm just looking 10 years in the future. If a nation perhaps is not signing on to this multi-governmental corporate conglomerate, which I call the beast, who is rapidly going after the New World Order or One World Government, well, perhaps they could just send a drought over to that country and bring that country down to its knees. So that's the military application to these things. And it's deeply concerning. And I could just see, you know, 10 years into the future, if a country does not get rain, you know, we look at the past hundreds of years ago, people would do dances, they would worship God and ask God, for rain. Well, in 10 years, they're going to have to call up Raytheon, because Raytheon is going to have control of the weather, and that's what it is. It's a complete usurping of authority of what was once under the dominion in the nature of the dominion of nature, and now bringing it and corporatizing it. So it's pretty concerning. With that closing, When the World Are They Spraying can be ordered at www.stopspraying.us. Again, www.stopspraying.us. You can also find clips and related articles on my blog, which is www.truthmediaproductions.blogspot.com. And again, I want to thank you and Roxy for addressing this, and Roxy, all the incredible work that you've been doing over the years. You certainly created a platform to which now millions are speaking on and bringing this to light. So thank you.
And Mark McCandish, how about you? Any closing comments?
Well, once again, Jerry, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really, really do appreciate your willingness to put this topic out there for the public's consideration. And Mike, it's great to talk to you again. I can't tell you how much I admire your persistence and your tenacity in the work that you're doing, and I wish you all the best. Godspeed.
Well, thanks, Mark, and again, thanks for doing your part, and Jerry, your part in exposing this crime against nature and humanity. We're in a real vital time here, and it's just amazing to see the masses waking up, people around the world. So
it always helps when people look up and begin to notice things, particularly if it's bad for their health. I still would really like to know why some branch of the United States government seems to be supporting this operation, why they're doing it. It would certainly be a lot easier to sleep at night if I had some idea of what the reasons were. Mitigation of global warming because of a higher output on the part of the sun could be understandable, and I'd really like to know how they balance the equation, how they figured out what it was that made it worthwhile with all the risks that we know there are, based on their own research papers you can find right on the Internet.
And Roxy, your final thoughts?
Well, I'm in the same thought with Mark and Michael both. I appreciate, the opportunity to be on your show, Jerry. You're always really good about this. And for the, raising public awareness, et cetera, I have the same questions. I would like to know why they are doing this, and I really hope to continue to have open dialogue with both Mark and Michael. I certainly appreciate there's just tons of areas that I just don't have the mindset that Mark or Michael have as well. So I really appreciate everybody.
We'll be back to do more.
Thank you, Jerry, so much.
Thank you. You take care.
And Mark, we appreciate you being on too. Let's close out the show, the first in a series of shows we're going to be doing this year on chemtrails, with a little bit more of the soundtrack from Michael Murphy's What in the World Are They Spraying? Thanks for listening, everyone.
This is a multi-billion dollar, if not trillion dollar operation. It's also very damaging, not only to the environment, but also to human health.